Palestinian groups declare a strike in the besieged Gaza Strip in solidarity with victims of Israel's latest brutalities in the occupied West Bank. Sudan's security forces kill another protester as tens of thousands of demonstrators mark the country's coup anniversary. And a new poll shows U.S. President Joe Biden's approval rating hitting its lowest as Democrats brace for midterm elections. Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in for World News. Our top story, Israel's deadly crackdown against Palestinians shows no sign of abating. Regime forces have killed six more Palestinians in separate raids in the occupied West Bank. And we discussed ongoing Israeli atrocities earlier with our guests in our news review program. Here it is.
Mourners have filled the streets of the occupied West Bank city of Nablus to bid farewell to the Palestinians killed by Israeli forces during their latest assaults. The mourners denounced the Tel Aviv regime for its crimes and called for justice as they carried the bodies of the victims. Five Palestinians were fatally shot during a raid in Nablus, while another one was killed in an assault in the city of Ramallah. Palestinian health officials say that around two dozen others were injured during the attack. Some of them are said to be in critical condition. The killings come just days after regime forces assassinated a senior member of the Palestinian resistance group, Lion's Den. Meantime, representatives of the Palestinian factions held an emergency meeting, declaring a mourning period in a strike throughout the besieged Gaza Strip in solidarity with Annapolis victims.
We call on the Palestinian youth in the West Bank and Gaza Strip to mobilize and demonstrate immediately and engage the enemy at all the confrontational fronts in support of our steadfast people in Al-Quds, Nablus, and all of the occupied West Bank.
Khaled al-Batish called on Palestinians living in other countries to mobilize in front of Israeli embassies and denounce the regime's aggression. He also affirmed the right of Palestinians to resist occupation. The statement said that the strike in Gaza will continue until the end of Tuesday. The regime has recently stepped up deadly crackdown across the occupied lines. More than 120 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank so far this year. Now, for more information, I'm inviting a couple of our guests. Our correspondent, Mona Kendall, joining me from Ramallah. Also with me is Wafa Al-Odaini. She's a Palestinian activist and journalist in Gaza City. Good to see you, ladies. So, Mona, tell us, more and more Palestinians are getting killed by Israeli forces, especially in the past few days. So tell us what the Palestinians are going to do about this, what the situation is like as we speak.
Well, we have to say that the regime had threatened to continue killing Palestinian resistance fighters here in the occupied West Bank under the pretext of battling Palestinians. At the same time, say that they would continue to be engaged in the different forms of resistance. We were talking about popular resistance, Palestinians taking part in demonstrations and protests against the Israeli settlement and confiscation of land. What's happening now is armed resistance. There is this newly formed Palestinian group, Lion's Den, in Nablus, where thousands of Palestinians had been engaged to the fighting of Israeli forces, part of the Palestinian group Lion Den. What happened, the Lion Den, of course, what happened early Tuesday is that Israeli troops, large numbers of Israeli forces, raided the city of Nablus. There were statements from the Israeli military that they want to arrest or kill or get rid of members of the Lion's Den group. Palestinian security forces spotted undercover Israeli units and the clashes took place. Then Palestinian residents of the Nablus city and Palestinian fighters of the Lion's Den engaged in the firing that took place in Nablus. the same time, Israeli troops surrounded a building in Nablus city, saying that it was the headquarters of those Palestinian fighters and this group in Nablus. We are speaking about five Palestinians were killed. At least there is one senior fighter or a leader of this group known as Wadia Hawa. The Israeli prime minister himself said, Yair Lapid, said that the Israeli soldiers succeeded in killing terrorist Hawa, and he was killed in exchange of fire. And he even warned the Palestinians that anyone would be engaged in hurting Israelis should know how it will end. This means they, and he said it was a part of a wider operation against what he described as terrorism.
Now, Wafad Odeni, let's given the situation and what's happening to Palestinians, you know, there are words of condemnation, they go on to strikes, they're retaliatory attacks, their rallies, funerals in support of Palestinians losing their lives elsewhere. But doesn't it seem that what matters most is not Palestinian unity? That's of the essence. Let's talk about that. And what's the situation like among the Palestinian factions and groups? Are they standing united together?
Yeah, well, firstly, thanks for having me. Regarding the Palestinian unity and their unity against the occupation, actually, Palestinians always prove that they are united against the occupation. And whenever there is attack or assault against any Palestinians, any Palestinian throughout Palestine, everybody move and mobilize, whether they took this, they take the street and support their oppressed people. So, for example, here in Gaza, since day one of the siege imposed on the Gaza Strip, since the first day of imposing the siege on Nablus, indeed, the Palestinians here in Gaza or elsewhere in the West Bank or even in Jerusalem, they follow up exactly what is happening there on the ground in Nablus. So, firstly, here in Gaza, they many times they took the street, and they demonstrate several demonstrations and the protests took place here in Gaza to support and to support or to call for Palestinians to be united against the occupation and to ask the whole world to stop the brutal occupation from keep committing crimes against Palestinians in Nablus. And today, for example, also there is a strike, a comprehensive strike throughout the Gaza Strip. So because they say that the Palestinian faction, all of the Palestinian factions here in the Gaza Strip, they announced that they are in solidarity with Palestinians in Nablus, and they hailed indeed the heroes and the martyrs who were killed and brutally murdered by the occupation forces. So indeed, sometimes throughout the history, it proves that whenever there is any attack in the Palestinian territories, you feel that all Palestinians throughout Palestine and Diaspora, you feel that they are all united. For example, in 2021, when Palestinian in the occupied West Bank in Al-Quds, in Al-Aqsa Mosque, indeed.
Okay, I appreciate that. Mona Kandil and Ramallah Wafad Odeni in Gaza City.
Welcome back, everyone. Saudi Arabia has long been accused of having a direct role in the September 11th attacks. Now calls are growing in the U.S. to prevent a Saudi-sponsored golf tournament at a course belonging to former President Donald Trump. A campaign launched by family members of those who were killed back in the 9/11 attacks has urged LIV Golf not to hold the games. LIV is a golf tour financed by the Saudis. Meanwhile, an advocacy group has called on Trump to cut ties with LIV. This is the second LIV tournament hosted by the former president this year. Another advocacy group has called the move painful and disappointing. Critics argue that it amounts to sports washing by a nation trying to improve its reputation amid growing criticism of its human rights record. 15 of the 19 hijackers back in September 11, 2001 were from Saudi Arabia. The kingdom denies any role in the attacks. Incident killed nearly 3,000 people. A protester is killed in Sudan as demonstrators pour into the streets in several cities to mark the country's coup anniversary. Thousands of protesters in Khartoum and its suburbs defied security restrictions and took to the streets. They're demanding an end to military rule. Now they're calling for a civil, democratic Sudan. Government has responded to demonstrations by limiting access to the internet. It's also ordered the closure of public institutions, schools, and businesses. Police say some protesters are armed and trained. Now, the Sudanese Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan has been in power through a coup since last year. Civilian leaders have been arrested under his rule. U.S. President Joe Biden's public approval rating has been going down. That, according to a new poll by Reuters Ipsos, ahead of the November midterm elections. Survey shows just 39% of Americans are actually satisfied with Biden's performance. Two-day national poll indicates 1 percentage point drop from last week. Latest poll shows about a third of Americans see the economy as the main problem facing the country. Respondents include both Democrats and Republicans, and with midterm elections just around the corner, new figures raising alarms that Democrats may lose control of the House of Representatives and the Senate. U.S. is facing high inflation, with many families struggling to cover expenses. Biden's popularity hit a record low of 36% in May and June. As the U.K. welcomes its fourth prime minister in just as many years, many are now looking to the future and if Rishi Sunak has what it takes to fix many issues facing the British economy. Robert Carter reports out of London.
During his first speech as British Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak used the occasion to issue a call for unity. Sunak must find a way to quickly unite not just a bitterly divided Conservative Party, but also a deeply troubled nation. However, he also issued warnings of difficult times ahead.
I will place economic stability and confidence at the heart of this government's agenda. This will mean difficult decisions to come.
The Prime Minister has inherited a country in crisis. Energy prices are high, cost of living through the roof, and millions of Brits are expected to struggle this winter. Another worry for Sunak, Conservative Party popularity has plummeted in recent months, sitting approximately 30 points behind the opposition Labour Party. Sunak's supporters say he's economically experienced from his days as Chancellor and praised Sunak as Britain's youngest leader in 200 years and the first ever non-white leader. But his critics claim that's just not enough.
He definitely has the credentials. He definitely has the experience, been there in the as Chancellor before. But again, we need to understand, you know, where does he sit right here, right now, with everyday voters? He has not been elected by the people, as well as most people feel that he cannot resonate with the ones that are struggling. I'm not sure if it is real representation for anyone of a minority background, especially when he comes from a very, very elitist club, and he does not really represent many. He's probably top 1% of majority of brown people or Asians, whatever you want to call it, in the entire world. So it's very difficult to sort of resonate and feel sort of close in that way.
Many challenges lie ahead for the new Prime Minister, in particular how he's going to overcome Britain's many economic crises. However, even if he does find a way to overcome Britain's economic woes, question marks still remain surrounding if he has what it takes to win the Conservatives the next general election. Robert Carter, London.
Iran's National Observatory, the INO, is the largest homegrown astronomical facility project. Newly launched telescope has recorded the first light image of a distant galaxy, marking a major achievement in the country's space quest. Yusuf Jalali reports.
NGC 23 is a remote galaxy which is more than 200 million light years away from Earth. What's even more interesting is that the interstellar object was observed by none of the celebrity telescopes like James Webb, but by a new indigenous Iranian observatory called INO, short for Iranian National Observatory, marking a milestone in the country's quest for deep space.
Within 3 weeks ago, which we got the first light, the so-called first light, we had no idea about the quality of the image we are going to get, and it was excellent.
Another debut image shot by the 3.4-meter optical telescope is ARP-282, an interacting galaxy pair located approximately 320 million light-years away. Scientists at the Iranian National Observatory say their telescope could see objects as far as 7 billion light-years away.
Of course, we can use this telescope to observe even deeper objects, but the highest quality of this telescope can be achieved up to 7 billion light-years away from us.
INO is built on Mount Gargash, north of the city of Isfahan, at a height of 3,600 meters above sea level. The project was initiated about 15 years ago, aiming at the development of a medium-class telescope to provide a research facility for national users.
In the next coming months, and especially the next year, the telescope will be delivered to the astronomers as the end user of this expensive and complex instrument.
Constructing INO was the result of complicated scientific and technological efforts, but there was even a tougher challenge, U.S. sanctions. The anti-Iran measures block high-tech imports and access to foreign know-how. The Iranian team purchased the glass mirror blanks from a German firm, but then had to figure out how to construct nearly everything else on their own.
Due to U.S. sanctions and some financial problems, they cut their relation with us, and we did the rest of project within last 12 years by ourselves.
INO is still not fully developed. Engineers need to integrate software, fine-tune the active optics, and install the first science instrument, a high-resolution imaging camera. Once completed, the telescope will help scientists understand galaxy formation and stellar evolution, and hunt for exoplanets.
With INO, Iran has marked its first giant leap in space exploration and has fairly entered the world space race. The telescope's builders are now thrilled to announce that they will soon release more stunning images of deep space, hoping to help the world catch a glimpse of the wonders of our universe. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
That's a wrap for your latest. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. The energy crisis in UK is finally showing up its true face, with the government expected to make further spending cuts. According to The Observer, schools in England are struggling to pay their electricity and heating bills, and 90% of them will run out of money next year. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote, schools in England are struggling to pay their electricity and heating bills, and 90% of them will run out of money next year, The Observer claimed recently. With the cost of living crisis already forcing some school children to go hungry, the government plans to cut spending across all departments. The National Association of Head Teachers told the newspaper that 50% of their schools will be in deficit this year, with the figure rising to 90% by next September. Power and heating bills at some schools have risen from £26,000 a year to £89,000, the report has stated. On top of this increase, schools are having to fund a 5% teachers' pay rise announced this summer. Chancellor Jeremy Hunt is expected to announce spending cuts to all departments, including education, at the end of the month. Several school trusts told the newspaper that they are eating into their cash reserves to keep their buildings heated and their teachers paid. However, there comes a point where we simply run out of money, said Gary Ratcliffe, whose trust runs three primary schools in Kent. Furthermore, Ratcliffe said he has seen an increase in the number of families unable to pay their own bills or feed their children. Families who have never required support before are coming to us, he said. There is a great sense of shame for the dad who works every hour he can, but still has to walk into school and ask for help. A survey released last week by chefs in schools found that 83% of teachers reported children coming to school hungry because their parents were unable to afford food. Nearly a quarter said that children at their schools skipped lunch due to poverty. Energy costs and inflation, which had been creeping upward since the end of the COVID-19 pandemic, have skyrocketed since the UK decided to cut itself off from Russian fossil fuels. Outgoing Prime Minister Liz Truss exacerbated the economic crisis with a disastrous mini-budget last month that crashed the British pound, an attempt to blame Britain's economic woes on Russian President Vladimir Putin. Responding to The Observer's latest report, a Department of Education spokesperson took a similar tack, blaming the cost pressures on schools on international events and promising to offset the cost via an energy relief scheme. Guardian wrote, 9 out of 10 schools in England will have run out of money by the next school year as the enormous burden of increased energy and salary bills takes its toll, The Observer can reveal. Early data from the National Association of Head Teachers, results of a survey of its members are due later this month, shows that 50% of heads say their school will be in deficit this year, with almost all expecting to be in the red by next September, when their reserve run out. This comes as Jeremy Hunt has made clear that all departments, including education, will be expected to make cuts as part of the government's debt reduction plan to be announced on October 31st. Head teachers and academy leaders are warning that further spending cuts will push many schools and academy trusts over the cliff and result in most schools having to lose essential teaching and support staff. There are no easy fixes left, said Paul Whitman, General Secretary of the NAHT, adding, schools are cut to the bone. This will mean cutting teaching hours, teaching assistants, and teachers. Steve Chalk, whose Oasis Foundation runs 52 academies in England, said, "At this burn rate, in under 3 years, we will be bankrupt. No one is in a position to keep going for very long eating their reserves." Chalk said electricity and gas costs for schools in his chain had rocketed from £26,000 a year to £89,000, even with the 6 month energy price cap. The foundation is also having to find an extra £4.5 million for the teachers' pay rise, which was announced this summer after school budgets had been set. The rise, which at 5% for most teachers remains significantly below inflation, is seen as crucial but has left the schools floundering because it came with no new funding. Chalk said he was absolutely frustrated that the government was planning further cuts. Any government that neglects the welfare and education of its children had better be saving up for its future mental health and benefits bills and investing in the justice system, he added. A spokesperson for the Department for Education said, "We understand that the schools are facing cost pressures due to international events driving up energy prices." She added that as well as the energy relief scheme, the schools would receive £53.8 billion in core funding this year, which includes a cash increase of £4 billion. But Johnny Otelli, CEO of the Education Alliance Academy Trust, which runs 7 schools in Hull and East Yorkshire, said, "I know a CEO of a large successful trust who says that after the unfunded teacher pay rises, they won't be going concerned next year unless there is extra funding." Otley's Trust is using reserves to manage energy, pay, and other costs, but he said there comes a point where we simply run out of money. Gary Ratcliffe, CEO of the Galaxy Trust, which runs 3 primary schools in Dartford, Kent, said his trust would be all right this year, but next year will be very tough if there are any more unplanned announcements. He warned that a very significant funding crisis was looming. Ratcliffe's trust is having to spend more on mental health support for children and staff struggling in the cost of living crisis. The school regularly provides food for desperate families as well as helping parents claim extra benefits or challenge rent rises. He said, "Families who have never required support before are coming to us. There is a great sense of shame for the dad who works every hour he can, but it still has to walk into school and ask for help." Lirora Kurdas, chief executive of the Confederation of School Trusts, said this year was uncertain, but next was looking really difficult, saying, "Many trusts are having to use some or all of their reserves, but reserves can only be spent once. The government must intervene as a matter of urgency. State education must be funded adequately by the state." Julia Harden, funding specialist at the Association of School and College Leaders Union, said, "Ministers must act now to avoid an impending educational disaster." She said, "These extra costs will necessitate staffing cuts, which will mean larger class sizes, reduced curriculum option, and less support for students."
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss your problems, questions you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. A child is like a white paper on which you can write good things or bad things. Entire personality of a child is developed by the parents, by the upbringing they do. And in this program, we try to provide all the necessary information that is required to bring up your child in the best possible way. The answers of your questions are based upon Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. Today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Nakavi, who is a faculty member of Al Mustafa University and researcher in the Hausa Ilmiya of Qom. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, Professor Nakavi, in our previous episodes, we have been discussing what things to be kept in mind while you are doing cognitive development of a child. Now, today, I would want to ask you, what things a parent or a trainer should be keeping in mind while he's doing a physical development, while he's working on physical development of a child?
When we talk about physical development, we mean the physical well-being and the proper physical development of the physique.
Yeah.
The body becomes strong. So that requires, of course, nutrition is important, exercise is important, resting is important. So we need to make the child have a follow a protocol in his life or her life. Of course, that requires setting rules. It requires providing a role model, as is there in all cases. So for the proper physical development to take place, of course, if the physical development is good, the emotions and the cognition would also fall in place. So it is something which is important for those aspects also, as they are important for the physical issue also. So they interplay with each other. I'll just give you an example. Normally, a child starts crying, 2 or 3 years old, 4 year old child. He or she would like to get up in your taken into your arms, and he wouldn't want to take the trouble of walking a mile or so. But if you stop pampering him, start making him or her start walking along with you, instead of taking him up in your arms, that would provide that exercise for him. If you make a habit of, for example, walking in the morning, walking in the evening, and you take the children along with you for playing and walking. So normally when a child starts crying, we immediately lift him up or her up and take them up into our arms, and let them not cry. They shouldn't be crying. It doesn't feel good for me that my child is crying or making a fuss. Whereas I was on, alhamdulillah, this year I had the honor to be on the Arbaeen walk, and there was a colleague of mine who had a 3 to 4 year child along with him, and he was walking all the time, not the whole walk, but whenever we were walking, the child was walking, and he never made a fuss for getting up into our arms, because the father had made him used to walking.
Yeah.
And the child walked quite some time without even crying once that, please lift me up.
Yeah.
He would get tired. So that's again balancing between our cognition, understanding of things, and our feelings.
All right.
So if, of course, if you, you know, don't need to snub him, of course, but you can be talked him into making this decision and taking this, making this attitude in him that he should be or she should be walking for her betterment.
Yeah.
So this physical development, of course, requires proper, as I said, eating habits, proper resting time, and proper exercise. Even clothing plays a role.
All right.
How the clothing, which is it proper for the weather, the person we are living in?
Yeah.
If it's hot, then how should our clothing be? If it is warm, if it is cold. So
and we have to take care of
acclimatizing to the climate of the.
Well, we'll talk more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Professor Naqavi. We are saying what things need to be taken care of while you're developing your child physically. Professor Naqavi, before going to the break, you said nutrition is important, exercise is important, a lot of things you said are important. A mother wants to pamper her child, a very young child, but she has to let him allow that if it's better if a child walks a few steps rather than taking him in a lap all the time. And that way, even a child develops that bad habit of always just being into the arms of mother or father. Well, before going to the break, you were talking about clothing. I would want you to give more details about clothing.
Of course, the clothing, if it is proper, then it takes care of the physical aspects of the human being, protects him. Clothing protects him or her from the
environment
and from the atmosphere and the change in the atmosphere. So that plays a role. Moreover, how to wear, what to wear, that is also
when to wear.
When to wear is important. Along with that development, the physical development, the why should be also gradually infused.
All right.
And
then
why are we doing this? Right. That cognitive development and attitude needs to be inculcated. For example, in the olden times, grannies and mothers, they knew. They didn't know the nutritional values of many foods. They didn't know these are proteins or these are carbohydrates or these are, for example.
How many calories?
Today,
mothers are more educated regarding this nutritional aspect.
Should be more educated, and they should educate their children to make them realize that we need a balanced diet. So that cognitive development and understanding of the balanced diet and the need for all types of food has to be taken care of by the parents, and the children should understand them. In the past, much of the household, as we mentioned once, that household remedies are there, and in the olden times, our parents, our grannies, and our grandparents knew the household remedies.
True.
Now every time there's a cough or cold in the family, we rush to the doctor. Oh, give me antibiotics, so I need to get away with this and be, you know. So this is not, when it comes to medication, when it comes to, we need to develop the immunity of the child. We should make him realize that by taking care of proper clothing, proper food, rest, you are also making your body immune.
All right.
And if you catch a cold or a cough or flu, it's not necessary to go for medication. You can use household remedies.
Remedies first. That should not be your first choice, basically.
Exactly. So, of course, if things get complicated, you need to go to the doctor. But a minor cut here, a bruise there, it shouldn't be, you know, the mother.
If you get scared, your child develops that thinking tomorrow, and he also kind of behaves in the same way.
Exactly. We have to take precautions, but not, again, going to an extent where the child feels that he...
The first step should not be cure, you want to say.
The first step should be prevention, and when it comes to cure also, it should be based on household remedies and very...
Well, we'll talk more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
يَا مُقْضِيَ الْخَيْرَاتِ يَا مُقْضِيَ الْخَيْرَاتِ
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in the 80th surah of the Holy Quran, Surah Abbas, verse 24, says, فَلْيَنْظُرِ الْإِنسَانُ إِلَىٰ طَعَامِهِ So let man observe his food.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is IRIB English Radio. I'm with Professor Nakavi and we are discussing physical development. What things parents should keep in mind while they are upbringing a child, especially when they're doing physical development. You said there are so many things that come into the physical development. That's nutrition, there's clothing, there's exercising. There are a lot of other aspects that come in physical development. But the very important point you discussed with us so far was that while developing a child, while providing this development to a child, a parent, a trainer should know what, why, when, and how. How is very important. And what is the aim? What is the goal where I have to reach after this?
Of course, when we talk about the physical aspects of our behavior, especially when we need to teach ourselves and our children how to sit properly, how to walk properly,
all right,
what our posture should be, sitting posture, lying down, how to lie down properly.
There are so many children who kind of lie in a very bad posture on their sofas and are eating as well. Yeah.
Become couch potatoes or something like that. So that is the problem. We need to first ourselves teach ourselves, educate ourselves how to sit properly. What is this proper sitting posture?
Mm-hmm.
Walking properly, lying down. These things have to be learned.
Yeah.
And they have to be, you know, taught to our children.
Well, Professor Nakavi, there are so many mothers around and so many fathers complained regarding the upbringing through the mothers, because they are very emotional. They think spending on child means loving him more or providing him more. There are so many mothers who may develop a child in other aspects in a very better way, but since we are talking about physical aspect, they would buy all the kind of junk food stuff which the father did not buy. Since the father did not buy, a mother would go to the market and buy all junk food stuff for her child, just to show her love. Is that correct? Does that play a role on the physical development?
By the way, term that you employ by saying junk food, junk is for the junk people. I mean, so really you're putting your child through an experience which is not going to be useful or beneficial for him at all. Because junk food is something, it's called, they call it fast food.
Yeah.
So the very notion that fast food should be eaten and gulped down, whereas you have to teach your children to take proper bites.
Swallow it properly.
Swallow it properly, munch it properly. I mean, use the the teeth properly.
Yeah.
We used to say, oh, you, how many teeth do you have? The child would say, oh, maybe 28. Then you need to, you know, use your mouth 28 times
to chew
the food, so it becomes full of saliva. When it goes down into the digestive system, it becomes digested easily.
All right. Thank you so much, Professor Nakavi, for being with us and providing so important information. Thank you so much to our listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you want to listen to our programs again, please go back to our official website, that's www.parstoday.com. If you have any questions, any suggestions, any comments for our program, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also search us on our social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam Radio. And when you go to our official website, parstoday.com, you'll find a tab, Call of Islam. Over there, you can find our programs. Until another session, fi amanallah, God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
High inflation, long-term recession, a hardline approach to the conflict in Ukraine, dissatisfaction with the chaotic withdrawal of occupation forces from Afghanistan, and the poor handling of the coronavirus pandemic are just some of the reasons that may cause the defeat of Democrats in the midterm elections this November. A majority of US Republicans have warned that if they win this November, they will change many of the key policies of President Joe Biden. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has more. A standoff over the US debt ceiling, aid to Ukraine on the chopping block, and impeachment proceedings against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, or perhaps even President Joe Biden himself. With opinion polls indicating they have a good shot at winning a majority in the House of Representatives in the 8th of November midterm elections, top Republican lawmakers have in recent weeks offered a preview what they might do with their resurgent power, and made clear they have their sights set on key aspects of the Biden administration's policies, both at home and abroad. Kevin McCarthy, the top Republican in the chamber, recently signaled in an interview with Punchbowl News that if Congress is going to approve an increase in the amount of federal government can borrow, as it's expected to need to buy some sometime next year, Republicans are going to want an agreement to cut spending in return. The California lawmaker Kevin McCarthy warned that members of his caucus were starting to question the money Washington was sending to Ukraine to help it fend off Russia's special operation. He told Punchbowl, "Ukraine is important, but at the same time, it can't be the only thing they do, and it can't be a blank check." Then there's the question of if Republicans will choose to exercise the House's power of impeachment, as they did against Bill Clinton in 1998, and as Democrats did to Donald Trump in 2019 and 2021. The prime target appears to be Alejandro Mayorkas, whom Republicans have pilloried amid an uptick in the arrival of migrants at the southern U.S. border with Mexico. Yet another target could be Joe Biden himself, as Jim Banks, chair of the Conservative Republican Study Committee, which crafts policy for the party, suggested on Thursday, 20th of October. There are also signs of division within the party over how the GOP should use its new majority. In his interview with Punchbowl, Kevin McCarthy said he was against impeachment for political purposes and focused instead on addressing crime, border security and economic issues, all familiar themes for Republicans running this year. The split was even more pronounced when it came to Ukraine. On Wednesday, 19th of October, Donald Trump's former Vice President Mike Pence called in a speech at influential conservative group the Heritage Foundation for Republicans to continue to support the country. Mike Pence said, "There can be no room in the conservative movement for apologists to Russian President Vladimir Putin." The day after, the foundation's president, Kevin Roberts, put out a statement saying, "Heritage will vigorously oppose Washington's big spenders who attempt to pass another Ukrainian aid package, lacking debate, a clear strategy, targeted funding, and spending offsets." Forbes Business Magazine explains more about the same story. According to current polling, the Republican Party has an opportunity to retake control of U.S. Congress in the November 2022 midterm elections. This shift is set against a backdrop of 40-year high inflation, Russia's conflict with Ukraine, and the country's economic recovery from COVID-19. A Republican victory will usher in a change in priorities. Broadly, one-third of the members of the Energy and Commerce Committee could change. This will shift the national debate from Democrat-led policies that focus on emissions reductions to Republican priorities focused on maximizing American hydrocarbon resources, as outlined in the House Republican Energy and Climate Strategy. Republicans have the momentum to impact energy and climate change policy in the United States. The next question is, can they deliver, taking steps to ease sky-high energy prices and address climate change represent a large opportunity for Republicans to solve major problems facing the domestic economy and energy markets abroad. Republicans will conduct rigorous oversight and require the White House to answer for its incompetence at home and abroad, with plans to hold hearings on the origins of the coronavirus pandemic, the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, the Justice Department's investigation into former President Donald Trump, and the alleged illegal possession of classified documents at his Florida estate, Mar-a-Lago. Republican leaders have also made clear they plan to run the House differently than Democrats have, notably by promising to end the practice of remote proxy voting that was approved as an emergency measure in response to the coronavirus pandemic. The Hill newspaper has also covered the same story from a different angle. From Hunter Biden to politicization in the Department of Justice and beyond, U.S. House Republicans have been preparing for months to unleash a flood of investigatory actions and findings if they win a majority in the 8th of November midterm elections. Investigations would be a major tool for the House GOP, as many top policy priorities would be unlikely to make it past the filibuster in the Senate or be signed by President Biden. Representative James Comer from Kentucky, the top Republican on the House Oversight and Reform Committee, in line to be chair of the panel, has promised hearings and probes into the Biden family's overseas business activities. Republican trust in federal law enforcement agencies plummeted alongside the rise of former President Donald Trump and special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into him, and a sense among the GOP that the Department of Justice and FBI are biased against conservatives has only grown since that time. One top topic for a GOP House will be the Department of Justice's decision to search Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate in August and seize classified materials. Republicans have requested documents from the National Archives and the FBI related to the decision to refer the matter of missing documents to the FBI and to execute the search warrant. After the raid, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Republican of California, warned Attorney General Merrick Garland to preserve your documents and clear your calendar. The Democratic-controlled House created a select oversight subcommittee on the coronavirus in 2020. The Republicans have complained that the committee did not hold hearings on the origin of the coronavirus. A report from the Republicans on the select committee released on Wednesday, 19th of October, pledged to keep investigating U.S. dollars that flowed to research on coronaviruses at a Wuhan, China laboratory. Officials who sought to squash the laboratory leak hypothesis and state policies that pushed COVID-positive patients into nursing homes. Also, GOP leaders have pledged to hold more hearings on the chaotic withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan in August of 2021 that led to the deaths of 13 service members in a bombing incident and the Taliban taking control of Afghanistan, saying that unanswered questions remain.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.